behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hi, welcome to Car Stuff. I'm Scott.
I'm Ben, and I'm here, of course, as always, with our super producer, Noel Slick Talk Brown. And boy, Scott, do we have a deal for you.
Yeah, you gotta love that polyester suit he's wearing, too.
Yeah, it's pretty good. He's got some snakeskin boots on.
Yeah, the plaid suit. Good look.
Bolo tie.
Yeah, 10-gallon hat.
Mm-hmm. The reason we're talking about all of this stuff is not just because Noel Slick Talk over here is a stylish dresser. No, ladies and gentlemen, it's because we are going to have some fun with today's episode. It's about dealerships.
Yeah, dealerships and specifically myths that get kind of passed around from generation to generation, from, coworker to coworker, friend to friend,
right,
about what really happens when you go to a car dealership. You know, that kind of the bigger things, you know, like you don't want to go in there and announce your trade right away. You want to hang on to that as like your back pocket bargaining tool, you know, right, things like that. So
yeah,
there's 10 of these that we have in an article that is well, I'll be honest, Ben, as of today, unpublished on our site, will be published soon. It's just kind of one of the things that's got to work through the system.
Mm-hmm.
But we're going to talk about it. We have the rough draft from our author.
Yeah.
And it's fascinating enough. Like, it's an interesting enough story that I think I felt like I wanted to get it on air right away so we could talk about it.
Yeah.
However, can I start out in a very unusual way?
Yeah, please do.
All right. I would like to start off by recommending another podcast. A different, maybe a radio program, I guess.
All right.
I guess it's a radio program, fair to say. But you can find it online. Now, don't do this now. Just write it down and go back to it. Listen to this episode first, then go and listen to this because it is a fascinating story. It's from NPR's This American Life, and it is a tale called 129 Cars. And that's the title of the episode.
Okay, 129 Cars.
129 Cars, yeah. It's from around December of 2013. It's easy to search and find online. The host is Ira Glass, and the internet version, I'll give you the heads up on this, the internet version has a lot of cursing in it. You could find a bleeped version of this if you want.
Uh-huh.
You know, it depends on who's in the car with you, I guess, when you're listening. But it is a fascinating story about a dealership on Long Island, a Jeep dealership, Chrysler, I think it's Chrysler, Dodge, Ram, Jeep dealership,
mm-hmm,
on Long Island. And their efforts to reach the monthly sales goal of 129 cars, combined from all the salespeople.
Ah, I see.
And you would not believe what goes on behind the scenes when the customers aren't there. And when the customers are there, there's a full month of recording that's happening here. It's about an hour and 15 minutes long. And it's absolutely fascinating. I've listened to it, two times fully through,
uh-huh,
since this has been December of 2013. And I'm in the process of listening to it a third time right now because I wanted to listen to it prior to this, but I only got about midway before we had to come in to actually record this.
So let's not leave the people hanging here, Scott. What's one thing you remember about it that blew your mind?
Well, okay, here's maybe the biggest thing is that they point out that it's not, these numbers that they have to reach, it's not like a contest. It's not a game to the dealership. These are numbers that are set by the manufacturer. And mm-hmm, or let's say that, the month that they're doing this, let's say it's October of 2013. They had to sell 129 cars. And if they sell 128 cars, they get no bonus from the dealership or from the manufacturer, which is Chrysler Fiat. If they sold 129, they get the full bonus. And the full bonus, just to give you an idea of what this amounts to,
mm-hmm,
is ballpark $65,000 to $85,000 is what the bonus is.
Wow.
Now, you sell one car less, you get nothing. You sell 129 or more, you potentially get that full bonus.
And this is going to go into one of the myths that we will address in our show, which is the idea about timing of buying a car. We know what it's like, guys. Scott, you've bought a car. Noel, you've bought a car. I've bought a car. What we all encounter, no matter who you are, is that your friends and family come out of the woodwork saying, well, Scott, if you want to get a good deal, you got to go on a, and when the weather's bad, you got to go on a rainy day,
or
something like that.
Loads of tips that are handed, mm-hmm, out or dispensed at that time.
I know a guy who knows a guy who met a dude at Arby's who can get you a deal.
That's right. Yeah, your best bet is to walk in with a suitcase full of cash.
Right. Yeah, a suitcase full of cash and maybe just an implied threat. Yeah. Maybe a ski mask.
Well, but you know, there's often some bad advice dispensed at that time when you're about to buy a car.
Right.
You got to kind of pick and choose what you pay attention to and what you don't, because some people really do know what they're talking about.
Sure, yeah.
You know, maybe they've been involved in the business or something.
And, of course, everybody's intentions are good, but bad advice or acting on some bad advice can actually harm your chances of getting the best possible deal.
Yes, exactly right. And not necessarily a quote, but a comment from this podcast, you know, this 129 Cars podcast is that, you got to remember that the managers and salespeople are all playing each other within the dealership. Mm-hmm. The customer is playing them both. Each dealership is playing the other dealerships in town. So, you know, there's not just one Chrysler Dodge Jeep dealership. There's four in this town. The manufacturer is playing all of the dealerships. So there's this huge roundabout game that's going on where everybody's trying to get the best deal and trying to outsmart the other person in just small little ways. And it's really fascinating to see what happens in this podcast. And you know, as we talk about our 10 myths, which we're getting to right now, I think that you'll find that, you know, a lot of the stuff that we talk about in this 10 myths podcast come up in that episode that I'm pointing you to right now.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We looked around for a while on some of this stuff just to gather various sources. And a lot of the myths that you will find in various magazines or online sites or podcasts, a lot of them are the same myths that keep cropping up, which should be a good indicator that they are indeed myths.
There is something to them in that case, right? Mm-hmm. So you want to, let's just start with number 10 and we'll count them down to number one. And they're not necessarily, you know, the most important is number one or anything like that.
Right,
but, you know, it's just, I guess the common knowledge stuff that we should get out of the way. How about
for
that?
Sure,
so,
yeah.
All right. So number 10, and this is a big one. I have to talk to my boss, which is just a kind of a ploy to buy time. Now,
Right. Sometimes,
oftentimes, they really do have to talk to their boss in order to make sure that the deal is on the level.
Right. Yeah. And when people imagine this scenario, if you close your eyes right now and you think about it, don't do it if you're driving, of course, but if you close your eyes and you think about it, then probably what you're seeing in your head is a table or a desk with the salesperson on one side and you or someone on the other. And it's finally come to the brass tacks, mm-hmm. the paperwork,
yeah,
the negotiations.
You get your arms crossed and the dealer is scribbling numbers on the paper there and mm-hmm. and you're trying to work out this deal. And he says, after finally you make your final offer, you say, that's what I'm paying. I'm not going to pay a dollar more than
right.
that. He says, there's a pause and he says, let me talk to my manager. And he walks out of the room. And then your thought is, he's just buying time. He's not even talking to anybody.
Right.
And one thing that, some pop culture that backs this up. Is that, and which we find really isn't necessarily true, but, think of that scene in Fargo where he is, where Jerry Lundegaard is trying to sell Truecoat to that customer who is irate about it. You know, the guy's coming in to write the check for the car. He says, oh, the factory installed Truecoat on this car. It's a $500 option. It just adds $500 to the price. Don't worry about that.
And the guy's livid.
Flies off the hook.
Yeah.
And then there's this back and forth about how he's not going to get taken here. And, you know, he's like, oh, these guys, it's always war. You know, when you come in here, it's always war.
Uh-huh.
And he says, well, let me talk to my manager. And he walks in and he says something about, you know, like the local team, like you have tickets to the Gophers game or something like that. And doesn't talk about the deal at all. Walks back and says, well, he's never done this before. But he said he'd knock $100 off that $500 option. So, do we still have a deal at $19,900 instead of, you know, the $20,000 I told you it was going to be? And, you know, it's fascinating to see that, you know, they actually played it out like it was playing into the people's idea that this myth really happens. But when you listen to, again, the example of the 129 Cars episode, you'll find that they really do have to go back and work this deal with their sales manager, with the general manager.
Right.
Make sure that it's okay.
Because that's a collective, as far as the manufacturers are concerned, that's a collective quota. That's that 129 cars, for instance, that number is something that the entire dealership is responsible for. Now, they may have internal quotas, but what they are probably doing, at least at an up and up honest place, is going to talk to the person in charge and saying, how close are we mm-hmm. this month? how much room do I have to move on this? How much latitude do I have financially?
True. And there's a lot of numbers that we could talk about. And I don't know if we want to get buried in it. Maybe it'll come up along the way as we talk. But
yeah.
But I do want to say that, you know, one fascinating part of this, and I said, you know, how everybody's kind of playing each other.
Right.
It's possible that the salesperson is playing the general manager as well,
or the
sales manager, I guess, maybe. So the salesperson comes in and says, you know, after the people agree to a price, you know, what do you want to pay per month? And they say, look, I'm not going to pay more than $250 each month. That's it.
Yeah.
So he goes to his manager and he says, look, they're not going to pay more than $299 a month.
Exactly.
And he says, oh, $299. Okay. Well, we can come down to two, and they bargain back and forth, and they go back to, he goes back to them, and he looks like a hero to not only his sales manager for coming in with a better number. They also think that, like, he's working both ends of the deal there in that case. And maybe I said that backwards. I'm not sure. I think I got it right, though.
Well, yeah.
He brings in a higher number, and then when it comes down a little bit, the sales manager thinks it's great.
Yeah.
The person that's buying the car thinks it's a great deal as well.
Well, also, if we're being fair, Scott, the manager probably knows that trick. And probably welcomes it. That's how they got there. We've got, there is one number that we should talk about, though. There's this great thing I found about from a former car dealer, from a former car salesman.
Okay.
And he's talking about the idea of a secret holdback amount.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Which is, I think, related enough. We can stick this under the same myth.
Of course.
You know, again, that myth is that when they go to talk to the manager, they are going above they're not really doing anything. They're just making you think that you have progressed or succeeded in negotiations because, of course, a lot of people prize themselves on that. And we were talking about, well, the numbers are really the king here. They're paramount. So this guy says that it's not so much a secret trick. But in the case of our dealership, he says, we didn't buy our cars. We floor planned them through GMAC. And so just to show the argument for this, he said we would pay 1% of a car's suggested retail price to GMAC every month. So we didn't have to pay the full amount of the invoice to buy the car from GM. And when we sold it, we received 3% of this MSRP as what they called a floor plan allowance.
So they're just keeping their lot full.
Right, exactly. But here's the rub, you know. He says, you've probably already figured out the goal here. If we sold cars in less than 30 days from when we got them, we got a check for 3% of MSRP and only paid 1%. So that's just free money.
Sure.
But if we sell it from 30 to 60 days after we got it, we get 3% and pay 2%. 60 to 90 days, we break even. So in theory, a fresh car off the truck could sell under invoice, but the way dealers think, he says, it's a fresh car, so we're less likely to take a loss selling it because someone else is more likely to come around and buy it.
Oh, so this means that a vehicle that stays on the lot longer than 3 months in somebody who is floor planning a showroom floor is likely to get a pretty good deal on that because they're anxious to get that vehicle off the lot because it's a loser for them.
Right. That's the idea. And again, that applies at that dealership, maybe, but.
And how do you know which is which?
And how do you know which is which?
I can tell you that's the one they're going to steer you to first if you come in looking for that type of truck or car.
Mm-hmm. Right. Like I'm hearing you say F-150, but you are secretly a Yugo man. I can tell. okay. Well, let's move on to number nine here.
Number nine. All right. Dress to depress. So, you know, the idea is that you go in, you don't wear your Rolex watch, you don't wear a suit.
Right.
You might wear some jeans that are a little bit worn. You might wear an untucked shirt.
Or like one shoe in a garbage bag.
Yeah. Yeah. not a good tactic. You might actually appear, you know, just general appearances. I know this is wrong to look at somebody like this, but when you see that, you might think that they're not necessarily a great credit risk for you. So you might get less respect, I guess, when you're at the dealership than you would if you were just, I don't know, not overdoing it. Not like, you know, wearing the pinstripe suit and, you know, the article says here, you know, you don't have your butler in tow with you or anything.
Right.
And you don't show up in, you know, your limo. However, you know, you do want to appear like you may have enough money to put together for a down payment.
Right.
You might have a job and you might have good credit and you might be somebody who is, you know, on time with bills. I don't know how you make that appearance, but you somehow do. You convey that with your the way you dress, the way you look, the way you handle yourself while you're at the dealership.
Right. A lot of it is grooming. I mean, you, of course, you don't have to wear a suit, but, you know, clean clothes, wear shoes.
Yeah, don't go overboard on this. That's
right.
The thing. It's all moderation. I mean, just don't dress down intentionally in order to think that you're going to get a better deal on something. It just doesn't work that way.
Yeah, the key here is moderation. You don't want to look like a headache, and underdressing in some ridiculous way in something that's essentially a costume makes you look like a headache. It's a red flag, and way overdressing could be just as bad.
All right, well, let's say that you're in a Rolls-Royce showroom.
Okay.
All right, and you show up and you legitimately have the money to purchase a Rolls-Royce, but you show up in blue jeans and an untucked shirt, as would, you know, some of these CEOs of dot-com companies or something. You know, they wear a hoodie sweatshirt in there and yet still be able to afford the product, but
right.
They might not get the attention that somebody, you know, that arrives, you know, that is maybe in a suit, as we said, or maybe someone that has a $10,000 watch on. They might, because they spot things like that. Dealerships and I should say sales people in particular,
mm-hmm.
know to look for things like that, you know, for signs like that.
So, right. There are signals.
Yeah, they really are. And, you know, it's very, very tricky. I mean, I would feel awkward if I went into a Rolls-Royce dealership because I know that I don't really have the cash, the backing to be able to purchase that vehicle. And they would likely be able to spot that immediately because I don't know if it'd be the way that I'm dressed or the way that, you know, I'm apprehensive about getting in the vehicle or asking questions about it, you know,
mm-hmm.
I'm a little more sheepish, I guess, around them.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd be interested to look, but I just don't know how, you know, I guess I'm not sure how they would profile every single person that comes in. And I know that's an extreme example, the Rolls-Royce or the, you know, let's say the McLaren dealership,
yeah.
or something like that.
It might change depending on the dealership, the price point of the car you're buying, like a luxury dealership may have different expectations, but every kind of dealership, I promise you, ladies and gentlemen, has had a customer who looked like they were, you know, one paycheck away from living on the streets, but paid in cash or something,
mm-hmm.
for a really nice brand new car.
Sure, exactly right. So like it or not, you're being profiled when you go there. Just keep that in mind, but don't dress down.
Yeah.
Okay.
Myth number eight.
Number eight. All right.
Dealerships are making it rain every day, all day, every day, money, money, money.
Yeah, yeah. But actually, they're barely making a profit. Now, when I say that, I know people are going to be outraged. There are some people are going to be outraged anyways, right? When you say they're barely making a profit, they're thinking there's no way because the markup on these cars, there's just no way that it's working out that way. It turns out the profit margins are very slim on new cars.
Yeah.
On brand new cars.
Yeah.
They cost a lot to build, you know, at the manufacturing facility,
mm-hmm.
You know, to develop all the research and development costs and everything go into that price as well. Whether the the people that build them are in a union matters as well, as far as how much the thing costs when it comes off the line.
It's right.
There's so many factors that go into this and shipping costs, you know, whether
sure.
it's overseas or not.
State fees, regulatory fees.
Exactly right. But this is pretty amazing. According to that report that I was mentioning before, that
129 cars,
dealers make something like 3 cents for every dollar on a brand new vehicle that they sell. Now,
yeah.
That's an extremely low profit. And all of this, I know this kind of gets jumbled around because they lose money on some cars. They make more money on other vehicles. It kind of
right.
depends on again, they're trying to reach that, in this case, 129 cars. Every dealership's got a target.
Right.
And they will intentionally lose money on some cars just to sell product,
mm-hmm.
just to get rid of that vehicle so that they can get their number count up, knowing that the bonus, the $65,000 to $85,000, will cover it eventually. But they can't do that for every vehicle they sell. They can only pick and choose when they do that. So it's got to be the right car, the right buyer, the right situation, the right day.
Yeah.
All this comes into play. So there's a lot of factors here, and it's really this back and forth chess game between you, the buyer, and, you know, the salesperson who has the dealership as their best interest, of course.
I'm glad you called it maybe the salesperson is the salesperson's best interest, but I guess that changes on a case by case basis. I will say that I'm glad you called it a chess game, Scott, because the internet has changed the way people buy cars. It's allowed people to become much more informed about it, about what car they want. And also, I would argue, much more likely to easily go to a different dealership, or much more likely to wait until they get the exact car they want. So those days of saying, well, we have a car that's in your price range, it's a little more than we had talked about because it has, you know, I don't know.
Leather seats.
Because it has heated leather seats, mm-hmm. right? And, you know, it's a little bit more like this.
Yeah, this one has tinted glass, and it has that aero package and also the 19-inch rims. Mm-hmm. So that adds a significant amount.
It's a little bit.
It's like $2,500 more.
And
however, yeah. It's not going to last long. I've got somebody else looking at it right now.
Right. He's calling right now. Yeah. Ring, ring. That's him. And it's the manager going like, pretend to come out and talk to me. And he's like, excuse me, sir. I'm in a meeting with someone. Yep. The car's still here for now. He's on the way.
Yeah. See, now, but, right? but the likelihood is that the customer will say, you know what? If I just drive 4 miles down the road, mm-hmm. there's another Subaru dealer that has the same model and make that I want.
Without the aero, without the rims.
Yeah, $2,500 less. It's not those packages, but it's the one that I initially look for. I'm going to go down there. And the thing is, you know, customers are very, very informed now. So adding these extras, adding these, you know, these add-ons, like you said, you know, the, you know, well, we've got this one, but it's got leather seats or, you know, whatever. That's much more difficult for them to kind of throw in there to, well, as they say, sweeten the deal. But as the customer would say, it just drives the price up.
Yeah, and speaking of money, let's get down into the next few. Number 7, Scott, and this, some people might argue about this one.
I think we've talked about this one on our podcast, maybe more than once even.
On dealerships and financing and the bank. Number 7 is bringing money from the bank.
Yes, and we've had listeners write in with their own strategies for this. And
right.
Some actually really good strategies.
Very clever stuff, yeah.
We have reported. Yeah, very clever. You're right. That's a good way to say it. Extremely clever, and I've actually thought about those emails as I was going to purchase my last vehicle. I was thinking about, you know, I kind of went through some old emails and was reading this stuff and was trying to really play all this out in my head, like, is that really going to work? Is that the best option? And then, you know, because we have the internet, because we're able to find out what kind of financing you can get at, you know, maybe even more than one credit union, either that or through your bank, maybe. You know, that's sometimes,
right.
sometimes that's a possibility. It's usually the credit union, or going through the dealership for financing. And believe it or not, you know, a lot of people say bring money from the bank, which means from the credit union or the bank. Sometimes, quite frankly, the dealership is your best option.
Right, because they have an existing network of their own banks and credit unions, and once they run your credit, they can check against their group, and they can get preferential treatment because they're such regular, intermediaries is a good word. They can also, of course, get you a deal from the manufacturer's credit arm, mm-hmm. you know?
Sure. And so instead of going to the credit union and, you know, on your own, you know, as an individual, and, you know, you may get some kind of benefit here or there if you're a teacher or if you're a
veteran.
Yeah, veteran or, you know, something like that. You may get a little bit of a break there, but you're going to have, I'll say it, a percentage rate of some kind to pay on that loan, of course. But if you go to that dealership, there are times if you're buying a new vehicle, brand new, there are times when they offer 0% interest, which, you're not going to find that at a bank or credit union. Obviously.
No,
you're just not going to. Or you can opt for the cash back option. You know, the cash incentives that they give you, and you know you can play one of those either way that you want. I mean, you can't have both typically. So sometimes the dealership is the best option for financing. It's not all the time. I just mentioned I bought that VW recently. That car,
mm-hmm.
and I went in with I had financing already from a credit union. And it was a pretty low rate. I mean, I'd shopped around. I found what I wanted.
Yeah.
I got a very reasonable rate. And I went into them and I told them that I already had it. And, of course, they said, well, let's go check and see what we can do for you. And, you know, I was already sitting there with my check in hand, you know, ready to write it, you know, sign it over to them.
Yeah.
But they had to check and I let them do it. You know, why not? If they can offer me a better rate, I would switch right then to do it. Why not?
Sure. Not look back.
No, sure. It makes sense. And I think it was like 0.1% lower that they could offer me. And he said, you know what? He was very fair about it. He said, I'm not going to beat you up over 0.1% on this sale. Just stick with what you've got and let's keep it easy. And it was a pleasant experience. I mean, this car that I bought recently, overall, we should talk about this someday, like the whole process, because I had a great experience. I really did. I had a bad experience at one place that I almost bought the car at.
Uh-huh.
And I backed out. I walked away from the deal, which was very difficult to do. It was really hard.
I was super close
and, you know, cash in hand, ready to go. And I had to walk away, and it was tough. I mean, I'll tell you, it's hard to do that when you're presented with the car that you want and everything you want, and then you realize it's not the vehicle for you, and you have to walk away. And it's hard because you don't have any other thing in the back, you know, in your back pocket maybe to go to. At that time, I didn't. I was firmly set that was the one.
Yeah, but you did the right thing. Clearly.
I did. Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, we'll talk about it someday, as we said. Yeah. But I did the right thing, and I did walk away, and I did end up with a very pleasant experience at a dealership. And a lot of the stuff, you know, that we talked about here, it just didn't happen. I mean, I didn't see any kind of backroom deals going on. I didn't experience any
secret handshakes,
no,
code words.
No, nothing like that. It was all very straightforward and as I said, pleasant. So
here's one thing you didn't do, which is interesting too. You didn't walk in with a suitcase full of cash, and that is number six here. Bring cold hard cash. The idea being that it will get you a better deal. And I think a lot of people maybe think that it'll get you a better deal. Once upon a time, way back when, that was probably true. But now the problem is that a lot of those incentives that you would get for finance, you're getting a certain car or something like that, they don't kick in if you pay cash.
No, and we're talking about new vehicles at a dealership again. If you go to an individual to buy a used vehicle,
oh yeah,
you know, here's the old deal. Like, you know, the car is $2,500, and you say, I have $1,800 in cash in my pocket right now, but I don't have more than that, and I'm willing to give it to you. And there's the back and forth, like, will they, won't they?
Right.
And oftentimes they will bite when they see that stack of, you know, $100 bills.
Right.
You know, ready to sell. But a dealership is not like that. They're not going to come down on the price because you simply have a wad of cash in your hand. It doesn't work that way for them. So, you know, you're better off to go to them and maybe even take, you know, a short-term financing deal. Like, you know, I think in the article here it says 36 months, you might get a better deal with that 36-month financing if you keep it, you know, on the low end than you would by paying cash. And I know it's kind of silly, but all those advantages, you know, like maybe even the, you know, the 0% interest deal, that might work out better for you in the long run. So take a look at that as well.
Yeah. Don't say no just because, you know, financing has such a bad name based on the incentives. It is possible to be a better deal. And that's not exactly a secret. Which, speaking of secrets, takes us to number five. Scott, this is a fun one. Trade secrets.
Right. And I like what this one is called. There's a term for this within the industry, within the business. And they call it parachuting the trade. And this is the idea that you wait until the very end of the whole deal and you say, oh, by the way, I have a trade in that I'd like to bring in for you. Can you give me a price on that? And then you think that you're sitting on top of several thousand dollars that were at the, you know, just moments ago, unknown to the dealership or the salesperson.
Right.
They were going to be, they're going to have to buy your vehicle as well. And this does not work.
Well, it doesn't work because, again, there's not a magic thing that dealers have never seen that will ever, like, bowl them over. You're not going to amaze them with your powers of negotiation or manipulation. In fact, their job in some ways, if they're dealing with someone who's kind of, I don't know, combative or hostile about it, then their job is to make that person feel like they're doing really well, because that's going to result in selling a car.
They know all the tricks. They have seen everything.
Every single one. And this trade thing, it's not some M. Night Shyamalan twist. It's not like finding out who Kaiser Soze is in Usual Suspects. It's something where they would just say, oh, we got another one. The best thing to do is be upfront, right?
Yeah.
Be upfront and transparent. This is what I'm looking for. I did my research. You know, I'm looking for this, and I also have this trade-in.
Yeah, and you basically know what your trade-in is worth, and you can work that as part of the deal. I mean, so be upfront with them, tell them that you have the trade-in, you know, that you are trading or you're thinking about trading it, and let them give you an offer and see if that's acceptable to you. You can always drive away with your trade-in vehicle and sell it yourself if you want to do it that way. There's options for you as well, you know, when you do it that way. You don't have to give it to them once you say, I have a trade-in. It's not like it's a done deal and whatever they give you, you have to accept. It's not like that. But this parachuting the trade idea, and that's a funny way to say it, is that, you know, it parachutes in at the last minute to save the day for the person who's the buyer. It's not that way. I mean, what really happens is it just will cause more negotiation because it kind of scraps everything that you've worked on to that point. So it leads you to having to sit in their office another hour or two while they work out what that's worth, how they're going to renegotiate this deal because, you know, up until this point, they didn't know that you had something that's worth, let's say, I don't know, $4,500.
Sure.
They're not going to just knock $4,500 off the price of your brand new car. It doesn't work that way.
No, they're not, and they're also not just going to take your word that it's the year it is and the condition it is with the miles it has.
No, they're going to inspect it, which is, you know, they're right. And of course, of course they're going to. I mean, it's all very on the level, or it should be on the level. I mean, you know, not every case, I guess, but it is going to lead to a renegotiation every single time. So don't think that you're going to get away with this one by making the trade kind of a last minute zing.
Right. Here's another thing that gets me, which I had not been very familiar with because I've never pursued this kind of thing online.
Mm-hmm.
That's myth number four, magical internet manager.
Yeah, yeah. And a lot of people might not even know that they have an internet manager pretty much at every dealership at this point. The idea is that, you know, there's somebody that is completely disassociated with the dealership, but they're just the internet manager. They're just they're out for your best interest, of course. You know, they're going to set up the deal. They're going to make everything work. And that internet price is the price that you're going to pay. And, you know, no problems. Just come on in and take a look at the car. And that's the rub, Ben.
Right.
You've always got to go to the dealership. You have to set foot on the dealership lot to look at the vehicle in person and to make the deal. And the thing is, when you go there and you say, I'd like to speak to John, the internet manager.
Yeah.
They say, well, okay, well, I'll come over here and introduce you to John. And you do meet John, but then John walks you over to Phil, who is the salesperson that's going to complete the deal for you.
Right, yeah. And there are very rarely exceptions to that kind of process, right?
Yeah. There's one good angle to this whole thing, though. And I've heard this recently, and I can't remember where I read this or where I heard it. But it was somebody who kind of was doing an informal study, I guess. You know, they did one thing. They walked onto a lot during regular business hours, and they're trying to get a price for a vehicle from a salesperson. And the salesperson would just hem and haw about, you know, given the price. They wouldn't really, you know, agree or say that, you know, this vehicle is this price.
Right.
While the person was on the lot, they would say, well, let's go inside and let's talk about the options, what's on the lot here. And maybe we'll take you over and show you this other model here. It's maybe a little more because it has leather seats, but, you know, I think you'll be interested because it looks like, you know, it meets most of the needs of what you're asking for. And you still never get the price of that vehicle. And it takes a lot of time, maybe even up to an hour, to get a price out of that salesperson when you're on the lot.
Right.
If you're at home and you look at the exact same vehicle, and this is what this person did, the very next day, they called and asked about the exact same stock number, the same vehicle, and within 5 minutes, they had the price of that vehicle. The internet manager gave them the price, and it was different. It wasn't the same price.
Ah, now that is confusing. I personally think you should engage on both fronts. If possible in the modern age here, because there's a reason the internet manager exists, and that's to do this sort of thing, to have these conversations.
True. And it's, well, the main purpose, again, to bring people onto the lot.
No, yeah, that's true.
There's very, very few cases where you can complete the whole sale online, over the phone, you know, whatever you want to do.
Right.
I mean, without going to the dealership. There's very few times when that actually works out that way.
They want the bodies in the door. But we have also talked about some innovative types of dealerships that are reworking these processes.
Mm-hmm.
Those would be the exceptions. There's a couple of luxury outfits where they'll deliver your car to you and pick it up to fix it. But that is rarefied air, my friends.
Now, many, many years ago, and I don't know how many years ago, maybe 10 years ago, maybe more even, my dad was buying a new vehicle, and it wasn't anything like a luxury car or anything like that. It was just, I don't know, it was like a Pontiac sedan of some kind. He bought the vehicle online, and it was, you know, across the state, the other side of the state.
Mm-hmm.
they arranged the whole thing online. You know, I saw photographs. There's, you know, like the inspection reports came back, all the Carfax and all that stuff. And the whole deal was done. I think it was online. Some of it was over the phone, of course. But they met somewhere midway, you know, at a coffee shop or something like that. He was trading his vehicle to them. So they just exchanged vehicles at this place, signed all the paperwork while they were there. All the, you know, everything that had to happen, signing checks and all that over.
Yeah.
That happened right there. And then he drove home the new car and the dealership employee drove back to the lot in his old car. It was a very clean, easy process. And that was a long, long time ago. Mm-hmm. I know there are sites online now or rather on television that advertise that you can lay on your couch and order a car and it can be delivered right to your house. You sign the paperwork right in your driveway.
Yeah, I think Amazon Prime does that.
Do they really?
Well, you have to drive the delivery guy back to the Amazon place when they bring the car.
Well, you know, it kind of makes sense that you have to do that, I guess. But, you know, do they deliver it in a drone?
I hope so. I hope so. only very small cars.
A giant, giant drone. That'd be kind of fun.
Let's talk about weather, which we mentioned at the top of the show. This is our third myth of the day. Rainy days, Mondays. When's the best time to get a car?
Those always bring me down, Ben.
They always bring you.
They always bring me down. Well, here, the truth is that a rainy day, a sunny day, a snowy day,
sure,
doesn't make a difference.
Yeah, if the dealership's open, they're there to sell cars.
You would think that it would make a difference, but it doesn't make a difference. They'll sell you a vehicle any day of the week, of course, any day of the month, any day of the year, really. I mean, unless they're closed for holiday, but they are in the business to sell cars. Doesn't matter if they have to go out on the lot with an umbrella. It's not going to be easier for you to buy a car that day. Simply because, you know, they have to sell, again, 129 cars or whatever.
Right.
It's still going to be the same deal no matter what. They don't have as much flex room as you think they do.
No, because, again, the numbers are binding. So the numbers don't take a day off because of weather.
And that's a good way to say it. Yeah, you're right.
And they're not going to, I don't think. Maybe this is different in the past, but I don't think I've ever seen or heard of in real life somebody who truly got a better deal because of the weather.
No, and you know, the author here, our author from How Stuff Works points out that what if you live in the Pacific Northwest? Every day it's raining out there. Or in Florida where it rains, you know, for like an hour or two every day in the afternoon.
Yeah.
Do you get a better deal in that 1 hour, 1 to 2 hours when they think that no one's really on the lot?
Uh-huh.
I mean, there's still deals happening. I know that, you know, let's say it's a rainy day on a Tuesday. Everything that was going on from the weekend and Monday is still being processed on that Tuesday. It just kind of skips over that. So maybe they don't get as much traffic on the lot. I mean, that does hurt them a little bit. However,
sure,
they know that they're going to make that up because the people that don't go out on Tuesday because it's raining will likely wait until the next sunny day and then show up, and then they're going to end up with more traffic on, say, you know, Thursday when it's a pleasant day. It doesn't work out the way that people think it does with bad weather.
Right. Yeah. It's strange because these kind of rules apply to some other things. You know, like there are general rules of thumb for maybe restaurants would be another industry you can compare when there are better days of the week to buy a certain kind of food or to avoid a certain kind of food. But that's more of a supply chain thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it is true that weather can affect a lot of businesses, for sure. Some businesses are definitely seasonal. Car buying is not near as weather dependent as you might think.
Not quite. I mean, I can see where maybe a Saturday is a bit more busy than would be, say, a Tuesday afternoon.
Yeah, sure.
You know, I just think that it works out that way, that people have the time to go do something like that. However, as you said, it doesn't necessarily matter quite as much in the situation of a brand new vehicle.
So we've talked about some weather. We've talked about some financing. We've talked about some ill-fated attempts to trick dealers into bending to your will. But now let's talk about the kind of deal you're negotiating.
Yeah, we're talking about purchase versus lease in this case. So the idea here, the myth is that you don't lead with the idea that you're going to lease the vehicle. You lead them into the sale thinking that they are going to sell the vehicle to you, that it's going to be a purchase, an outright purchase.
Right. And then later, I guess in this case, not quite parachuting the trade, but you parachute the lease once you're in that back room. the idea here is that if the dealer, if you know, Noel Slick Talk Brown walks into a dealership and says, okay, I know exactly what I want. I want this, I want to lease this, you know, 2014 Nissan or whatever, and I want to lease it for 3 years. What can you do for me? The idea is that the salesperson will be like a shark smelling blood in the water and drive the price up over and over, but just to make sure that they get the maximum amount of money out of this lease deal. But that's not really how it happens, right, Scott?
No, that's true. In fact, a lot of people think that, you know, once you mention lease, that your negotiating power is gone.
Like, right.
You have no negotiating power like you do when you're purchasing the vehicle. That's not true. You can negotiate the price of a lease as well, which a lot of people have, they have no clue that that's the case. They see that advertised price, you know, the required down payment, you know, the first month, last month, whatever
sure.
it happens to be, title, tax, all that stuff, and here's your payment. It's something that you are able to negotiate with once you go there. A lot of people just have no idea that that's the case, and they really don't care how you pay for the car or how long you're paying for the car or whatever. And they know that they're getting it back in 3 years. They understand that. But there's programs in place from the manufacturer for that as well. Like when you return
right.
a lease vehicle, they can then maybe in some cases certify it as a pre-owned vehicle from the dealer, extend the warranty 2 years and sell it to somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
They can do many different things with it. They can send it to auction. There's a lot of options to them. So, they don't really care that you're going to take the car for 3 years or whatever. I mean, they're happy
right.
just to get it off the lot for now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because it's still moving money and moving product mm-hmm. through the dealership.
Yep.
So, now, if we could have a drum roll from Slick Talk over here. Perfect. Scott, what is number one?
Number one is the myth that dealers make money on every single car that leaves the lot. And that is not the case. They
what?
Sometimes, and I know we've hinted at this, we've touched on this, we've said it, but there are times when they lose money on certain vehicles, like on demo vehicles or cars that have been sitting on the lot for several months, as you mentioned earlier,
yeah.
you know, with you're playing this numbers game with, you know, the percentage that you pay. There are times when that happens. And there's, again, other times when they will sell a car at a loss in order to know that they're going to hit their target in order to get the bonus payment. And, you know, there's all these numbers that are just swirling around the dealership all day long, every day, for that full month, and
right.
it can get very confusing, but they really know what they're doing. They're watching those numbers all the time. So these monthly quotas that they have to meet, you know, it's better to sell a vehicle than it is to not sell a vehicle that day or that hour or whatever, you know, however busy this dealership is, even if it's at a slight loss, than to have the car still sitting on the lot, you know, at the end of the month when that could have been gone.
Right. Yeah, exactly. These loss leaders are part of the calculation of the larger thing, too, right?
Yeah, loss leaders. You just said it. Now, that's a term in the industry that they use, and it's cars that are intended to be sold at a loss. They know that they're going to lose money on these cars if they sell them at the price they're advertised at and they're sitting on the lot. But the idea is, and this kind of goes back to almost like a halo car situation.
Exactly. I'm glad you said that.
It's similar to that in that, you know, they hope that the buyer's going to come in and they're either going to add extras onto the vehicle. You know, they're going to say like, yeah, I'd like that true coat that you mentioned for $500. Or they're going to say, you know, they came in for a lesser vehicle, like say an economy car, and they end up leaving in kind of a mid-range vehicle. You know, they upsell the customer.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
So that's the idea with the loss leaders is that they know they're going to lose money on that vehicle. They're going to gain it somewhere else.
And this is kind of like, this is something that happens in video games, just for a comparison. Sometimes a video game console manufacturer or something will make a console, like imagine, you know, an Xbox or PlayStation. I don't remember specifically which one it was. I think it was the PlayStation. And they'll sell it for less than it costs to make the thing because they're making their money off you in another way, you know?
Interesting, because the games themselves are $80 each or whatever
right,
it happened to
right.
be.
Right, right. And that's a similar process. I think one thing that, again, this former car dealer had said in the article that I read by him was that people are not entirely – just as a rule, we are not entirely aware of what motivates us or guides our decisions. So one of the reasons, again, that the internet manager is such a crucial piece in getting people to the actual lot is that dealerships spend millions of dollars to put you in an environment where you are more likely to respond to the things that you more likely to respond in a profitable way for the dealership. And hopefully for you, hopefully you find the car you want. But once they get you in there, these loss leaders, right, are part of a bigger picture. And one of the reasons I'm glad you said halo cars is because halo cars were, in my opinion, and are, in my opinion, just the perfect way. You want to get me in a dealership, then get that Hellcat out there. You know what I mean?
Sure, yeah. And you'll come in to take a look at it.
I'll come in to take a look at it.
And you can't afford it.
Oh, I can't afford it.
But you might be able to afford that that Charger SRT that's
right
next to it.
Yeah, you know, sales guy might drop by. We might have a conversation about what the Charger and the Hellcat have in common.
Yeah, what they don't have in common. And then also the enormous price difference between the
right,
two.
Right, right.
And what a deal that is if you get that Charger SRT, right? I mean, it could be a fantastic deal for you. And when you had just come in to, you know, maybe even look at something much, much lower down the product line, you're going to look at a Dart.
Right.
And,
right.
And you end up walking out with a Charger SRT. And that, and honestly, it happens because when you're on that dealer lot or in the showroom, it goes from being a very pragmatic decision that you made at home, talking to the internet manager with a piece of paper next to you and a calculator, maybe.
Sure.
Figuring out exactly what you can afford and what's, you know, what's in the budget and, you know, what's reasonable. And then you go to the dealership and it becomes a very emotional purchase. It goes from pragmatic to emotional at that point. And you're right. And you and I have both talked about this. I know that there's a lot of little tricks that they play as well when you're at the dealership. And one that you mentioned, and I saw this firsthand many times in the last few months. When you walk in and they offer you something.
Oh yeah.
And it could be as simple as, you know, those little, I don't know, it looks like almost a quarter bottle of water.
Yeah.
Very, very tiny. I mean, and I say quarter bottle, I mean, it's like 8 ounces of water.
Sure. Yeah.
And they offer you a free water as you walk around. And of course, it's got a little label on it that says, you know, whatever dealership it is to.
Scott Benjamin, Crazy Scott's.
Yeah, exactly. And it's a welcome thing to have, you know, like when you're on the lot, it's hot or whatever, you know,
yeah,
they say,
yeah,
offer you a bottle of water, and you say, sure, fine. But when they hand you that bottle of water, there's this weird psychological thing that happens to you in that you feel some sort of obligation to them. You feel an obligation that, well, I gotta, you know, they've given me something. They're friendly to me. I'm here on their lot looking around. I can at least talk to them for 5 minutes. I can make that concession that, instead of just saying, no, thank you, I'm just here to look, you then feel like, well, I do kind of owe them 5 minutes of my time.
It's because reciprocity.
Because they gave me this 8 ounces of water, whatever it is. And it's silly, I get it. But it really, truly does work.
It works on quite a few people. One thing that this podcast has fascinated me with is that it makes me think of a guy that I've watched for a while, a British mentalist named Darren Brown. Did I talk to you about this guy?
No, you have not.
Oh, man. He is we're lucky that he's not selling cars because this guy has mastered body language and these little cues. You remember, was it Kevin Nealon who did the subliminal message guy on Saturday Night Live?
I think that was him, yeah.
This is like a real-life version of that guy. You can go on YouTube right now. I know it's sort of a tangent, but you can go on YouTube right now and watch this guy. Again, his name is Darren Brown. You can watch him do things like go into jewelry shops and delis and pay for things with fake money, with blank pieces of money, sized paper.
And he just like through whatever way of suggesting
suggesting.
He's giving them an honest payment and they're going to take it and they don't even look at it. They see it, but they don't see that it is clearly monopoly money.
Yeah, they just process it. Now, he's one of those guys, I think, who could maybe do a secret trick on a dealer or something.
Now, I've seen these guys in action before, and I don't know if this is the one in particular, but they are extremely clever with the way they do this and very slick. And it's easy to sit, you know, behind your computer screen and say, well, I would never have fallen for that. However, if you're in the situation, if you're there and that's really happening and you're distracted with whatever else is going on, sleight of hand type stuff and power of suggestion, all that is so powerful. And, you know, dealers use this to a certain degree. It's
sure.
not quite as extreme as what you're talking about
right.
With this mentalist, but it really is. It's a cat and mouse game. It's a back and forth. It's a chess game. It's a game of not necessarily that someone is going to come out, you know, as a huge winner, but no one wants to be taken. They want
right.
to feel like they've got a little bit of an edge, and there's little things that they do to allow the customer to think they're getting that little bit of edge, they're getting a deal.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also things that, you know, the customer does that makes them think, we can make a concession on that point.
But that's the thing. If you're in a situation where you are talking to a professional salesman, a professional saleswoman, a professional salesperson, then just be very skeptical of the times when you feel like you are getting a concession from them.
Mm-hmm.
It might be all part of the game, and it's not a bad game. This is how it's done. I do want to say one thing that wasn't on our list, but the old bargaining trick of being prepared to walk out.
Yes. Yeah.
I think that's valid if you're on a lot. Don't ever let, if you're in person, which is again where the dealership certainly wants you to be. If you're in person and you feel like this is going south, is not where you want it to go, to me, that's okay. Be prepared to walk out, but only if you're really prepared to walk out. Don't be that person who's like, I can get up and leave now if you don't intend to do so.
Yeah, you really have to be ready to do it. And,
right.
And also, you don't want to be the guy that walks out and then the next day has to come back sheepishly and say,
"A walk of shame.
Oh, you know what? You guys really did have the best deal, and I'm sorry that we didn't work out yesterday, but let's talk it over again." Because that's never going to go well for you. You're going to lose some power in that negotiation at that
right.
point.
Right. And you were already antagonistic in these. And, people who work at car dealerships are trying to make a living like everybody else. And you don't make a living, or at least you can't for a long time make a living by, I'll say it to be candid, you can't make a good living by screwing over people.
No, you can't be a charlatan and,
right.
and stay in business. It just doesn't work that way. I mean, we've talked about that so many times with other things mm-hmm. too, like, with whether it's oil change places or used car dealer lots that show up on street corners sometimes. You can't remain in business, at one location with the same group of people if you're going to cheat them all the time. It's not going to work. You have
right.
to be upfront. You have to be a reasonable, responsible, upfront person.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, I mean, this is a very tough gig. I mean, when you listen to, and I hope that you do, I hope you go and listen to that 129 cars.
Mm-hmm. Available online, This American Life.
Yeah, exactly. Go search that and you'll find it. I promise you, if you like this podcast, I promise you, you're going to love that episode of This American Life. It's fascinating. I'm going to go finish the one that I'm listening to right now, and this will make time number three for me to listen through
yeah.
this. It is, it's amazing what you see or what you hear when the curtain is pulled back.
Yes. And can I say one thing before we end, for everybody out there listening, who has worked, with or in a dealership or is currently a salesperson, I want to see what you guys think about this. This is something one of my relatives told me a long time ago, which was that for a car dealership, but really for any business, the best advertisement is a satisfied customer. So let me know what you guys think about that. I would love to hear, and I hope I'm not opening a crazy door here, Scott, but I would love to hear some dealership horror stories, either from salespeople, managers or people, mechanics, or from customers themselves.
Just horror stories, or do you want to hear good stories as well?
I'd like to hear good stories too, but come on, man, I want the juicy
train
wrecks.
That's what sells the papers, right?
That's what sells the papers.
Yeah, the headline, the catchy headline, the tragedy sells the papers. So, all right. So that's a good idea.
Yeah.
If you could please just send in, keep it somewhat concise so that, we can actually maybe read them on air someday if we get to another Nuts and Bolts episode.
Sure. Change the names if you need to.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's protect the innocent here in some cases. All right. But honestly, I bet there's some pretty interesting stories and some unusual tactics. The person that I sit next to here at How Stuff Works at my desk, the person I sit next to had a pretty bad experience recently just before I went in and had my really good experience.
Oh, no way.
And I was a bit apprehensive based on what I heard that person go through,
mm-hmm.
Versus mine. And I was, you know, pleasantly surprised, as I said. So, you know, there's good and there's bad out there. Hopefully you've had much more good than bad.
Yeah.
But if you have had a bad one, let us know about it.
Yeah, and hopefully you've had as much fun listening to this episode as we have had making it. Let us know if we missed any car dealership myths that you picked up on. You can tell us on Facebook. You can tell us on Twitter. We are CarStuffHSW at both. You can visit our website. That's right. Scott Nolan and I are moving up in the world. Got our very own website, CarStuffShow.com, where you can hear every podcast we have ever done, and there are quite a few. But if you look through our podcast list and our blogs and our videos, we do videos as well, and you think, hey guys, why haven't you covered this? We want to hear about it. Write to us directly and let us know. Our address is
carstuff@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@howstuffworks.com.